Good morning and welcome to a full day of college football. Last Saturday was just a tease, like opening one present on Christmas Eve. Well, now it is Christmas morning and College Football 134 is here to preview the presents you get to open. I am Douglas Farmer. That is Andrew Cayley as Covers gets going live this Saturday morning. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Douglas. What is that Christmas Eve present usually? Is it pajamas or did you get like a good present on Christmas Eve? Are we going to have a good present in terms of these college football bets or was it more like I said, socks and pajamas?
To this day, Santa Claus visits our house Christmas Eve during dessert. And, you know, I always ask for something glamorous and glorious in that moment. And I always get a book. So
books are good. You're
yeah,
old
I mean,
now.
You can see a whole shelf behind me. I'm not complaining about it. But if you're asking me if it was socks or pajamas, it has always been a book.
That's great. I love books. We love books. And we're smart guys here, so we're going to give out some smart plays. We've got all of these games to bet on this week. I'm so excited. It's just giddy that they're still letting us do this. They didn't can us after 1 week, so we're still here. We're going to keep going. What? No.
Don't say those things out loud. There is only so much time before kickoff today. So, you know, we can talk about the comedy in Colorado next week when we record on Tuesday. That's right, folks. 100%. College Football 134 pops up in your podcast feeds twice a week to make sure you don't miss a thing in this wonderful, glorious Christmas of a sport. Remember to rate, review, subscribe, like, all of those verbs. While you're at it today, throw some of your best bets into the live chat. We've already got Carlos hopping in, offering up Carson Beck over 260 passing yards. We will get to that in a moment. The worst that happens when you put in a best bet there is I'm going to disagree with you. And Andrew, I've been disagreeing with you for years, and you're still carrying forward. So clearly that's not that much of a burden.
If you aren't used to you disagreeing with them, then you're just not meant to be in Douglas Farmer's life. That's just it. But we like you.
It is my MO. What do you think? Should we start with the biggest games of the day? Should we start with some Clemson, Georgia?
Probably. That's probably a good place to start. Noon slate, like you said, we've got the line here. Minus 11 and a half, minus 12 now. So that has tightened up a bit. When we were talking on Tuesday, it was minus 13 and a half. I gave out under 24 and a half in the first half of that game, which luckily enough is still available right now. A little more juicy at about minus 120, but you can find that out there. Now, I think this move is similar. Like it kind of goes with the reasons that I kind of like the under two strong defenses, two good coaches who know how to prepare for a game like this. We talked about this on Tuesday. It could be a bit of a rock fight. Very, very tough move in the football. Additionally, Trevor Etienne sounds like he's not going to play. Same with Roderick Robinson. So the Dogs could be down to running back number three with this one. And I've heard other people say, well, they could be running using a walk-on running back for this one. It's Georgia. Those walk-on running – if it is a walk-on running back, it's going to be the best walk-on running back in the country maybe. But it's not. They have a really, really deep running back room here. It's going to be a highly touted freshman or redshirt freshman. I don't know exactly who it's going to be, but they've got a lot of talented guys in that room. So I'm not too worried about that. I think Georgia still runs the ball. Like I said, that room is loaded. I think they'll be fine. Really quickly, Carson Beck over 260 passing. I can see it. Like I can see them leaning on that passing game with those running backs out. But Clemson has a really strong secondary. We talked about this, like I said, on Tuesday. And I think forcing the ball down the field could be an issue. I think Kirby Smart is going to be smart about this and not put Beck in a position to succeed. You can go on, guy. Come on.
No, I'm judging you for Kirby Smart is going to be smart about this. You deserve some for that. It's too early for terrible puns like that.
It's early, though. Come on, give me a break.
The Kirby Smart aspect, to me, that's the game. That's the – with the running back question – not even questions. The running back issues that Georgia is going to have today is does Kirby Smart want to say, hey, Carson, start your Heisman campaign? Or does Kirby Smart do what is only natural to Kirby Smart and go, you know what? Let's just win this 17-7. Like, I don't care. Kirby Smart has never cared about style points. That might have cost Georgia last year. But with a 12-team playoff, there was no lesson to be learned from that. Kirby Smart can just go ahead and continue to win games the way he prefers. I continue to lean to the under. I joined you on that first half play in the end. You got into my head with that, and it was enough to get me over the line.
Yeah, and people all like, yeah, Carson Beck is back and he's good, but he's also down his top two pass catchers this year in Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey. So, like, obviously there's talent. Like, it's Georgia. There's NFL players everywhere. But those two guys were really good, and there's going to be a bit of a drop-off in production when all is said and done, I think, in that position.
And then there is Penn State at West Virginia, also at noon. I haven't dug in as much on that game, but I know you have. That line has fallen to 7.5, which gives me some thoughts. Where are you at on that one?
So, yeah, I wrote up this preview that you can find over at covers.com. I took West Virginia plus 8.5 in that preview. Don't love the 7.5 as much, obviously, but Drew Aller by more than a touchdown in Morgantown. Morgantown is not Happy Valley. It's not Death Valley, but it's not an easy place to play by any means. And this is a season full of expectations for Penn State. And if they want to take that next step, it comes down to whether, like, they've got the defense, they got an offensive line, they've got those two running backs in Catron Allen and Nick Singleton. But this team only takes that next step if Drew Aller takes that next step in his development and becomes an effective passer, particularly downfield. I think West Virginia has underrated cornerbacks, and they can take advantage of the fact that Aller hasn't pushed the ball downfield well, particularly against the best teams he's faced. I'm not saying that West Virginia is Ohio State or Michigan, but they're still an underrated team that went 9-4 last year. And you can kind of leave those corners on an island, I think, at times, and focus on stopping those two running backs. The defensive line has got some new additions, including Penn State transfer Fatorma Mulba at defensive tackle. So he's going to be rearing to go against his former team. You slow down that running game. You keep that close. I also like Garrett Green as a dual threat quarterback, and he's got two running backs in Jaheim White and CJ Donaldson, like thunder and lightning kind of combination there for West Virginia. They should be able to do enough to move. Like, I know that Penn State defense is really good and, like, maybe the best in the country, but there should be enough for West Virginia here to keep that one close. So leading into that, I would say my best bet, we were talking about this all week, and I was like, oh, I think I like West Virginia. Even like Parker came on and he's on Penn State, but I like, here are the reasons why. And I kind of dove into that West Virginia line. But the bet I found while doing my research that I really liked is Garrett Green over 43.5 rushing yards. Like I said, he is a true dual threat. He threw for almost 2,700 yards, rushed for another 700 last year. Kind of same theory as we had with Haynes King last week, too. He is going to have some designed runs. He's a dual threat quarterback. And those designed runs will help mitigate some of that pressure created by a very good Penn State defensive line. And that defensive line is also just going to pressure him sometimes. He's going to have to tuck it and run. He went over this number 9 times last season. And you're like, oh, well, did he do it against good teams? Well, he did it against Penn State last year. He rushed for 71 yards in last year's meeting with Penn State. I think West Virginia is better than they were in the opener last season. And I really like this him to go over this number in here. And it has been on the move. I'm seeing it as high as 44.5, 45.5. I'd probably take it up to 49.5. Really like this play here for Garrett Green over 43.5 rushing yards.
I'm glad you found a play on that, because that's the job. That's what we're here for on Saturday mornings. But I want you to know that what I enjoy more in life than disagreeing with you is watching you be tortured trying to figure out a game. It was a joy on Tuesday to know you had a position and then bring Parker on College He's Football like- 134 recording on Tuesday and watch Parker just give you conflict. And it's nice to sow chaos in somebody else's
life. Well, he said that Parker, to basically surmise what Parker said, that Penn State doesn't need Drew Aller to be good to beat West Virginia in this matchup. And I think that West Virginia has made enough improvements on that defensive line in Morgantown that they can keep this one close.
We will find that out at noon, but then we keep moving throughout the day, throughout the biggest games. And our loyal listeners know I want to talk about UNLV at Houston or South Dakota State at Oklahoma State. But before we get to our steak, we should eat our vegetables. And this is the first time anyone has ever used vegetables to describe something in Florida. That's right. It's the who should start saving all their boxes from packages to pack up their own home bowl. Miami at Florida. Miami is currently a 2.5-point favorite. I don't really want to bet it yet, if at all. You know, Andrew, I live above a busy intersection. I've got a nice balcony right here. sometimes I'll be sitting on it and I'll see a car accident coming. That guy's not stopping at this red light. There's nothing I can do. I can't jump down four stories and stop it. So in that moment, I take a sip of my beer and I watch what happens. And now this is real life. I have to hold my breath for 30 seconds afterward, hope everybody gets out of their cars just fine. I don't have that worry, Miami at Florida. I get to just watch this car crash happen. And I know that one of these cars is going to be totaled. I know at the end of the day, either Mario Cristobal or Billy Napier is going to go home and go, honey, those Amazon packages you got this week, did you save the boxes? Because we might need to start packing up the house. And no, maybe that's not the most pure of heart way to watch a college football game, but I'm just not that good of a person. That's where I'm at, Miami, Florida. I am looking forward to watching somebody else's angst, an entire state, have its own panic attack.
Yeah, I think Miami needs it more than Florida does. This is like poor Mario. Like, he's, that seat is getting hotter all the time in Miami. Things are set up well for him in the ACC this year. I like Cam Ward a lot. But would I be surprised if Mario goes into Florida and loses a football game because maybe he mismanages it? Like, that is certainly on the table. I give the edge to Cam Ward over Graham Mertz, even though Mertz kind of had a nice season last year. I think Florida's talent might be a little better overall, but I think Miami's top-end talent has the edge as well. This is a really tough game. I'm not going to bet it. I would have a very small lean towards Miami, -2 at less than a field goal. But if you told me the threes were up there, I'd probably take Florida State getting three at home. Like, it's just kind of one of those situations. So probably stay away. But like you said, stay away, but we can't not watch. It's going to be a train wreck for somebody.
We cannot not watch. You mentioned that number. It has moved this week from Miami 3.5 down to Miami 2.5. And I want to go on a little bit of an offshoot on that fact. I looked at every FBS versus FBS game in weeks 0 and 1 from the last two seasons. And games that had a line move of note the week of, the line move was wrong 57% of the time. Ooh. It's not that I'm saying fade the moves. I'm saying this time of year, you should ignore the moves. They're not smart this week. These lines have been out since June. And while I'm out on my bike and you're watching the Blue Jays succeed, no, that's not right. You're watching the Blue Jays fail. We're not necessarily diving all the way in on college football in June. Well, plenty of people are. These lines are sharp by mid-August. So a move in the last week is just public money showing up late. This line moving across the key number from 3.5 to 2.5 actually does make me think, hey, maybe I should give Miami a little bit more credit. I'm not going to do that. 57% wrong is not a huge trend, but it's enough to make me want to note to everybody, stay away from trusting the lines like you will later in the season.
Yeah.
And we mentioned that line, it shrinks. We've got good friend Jared jumping in the chat asking if this angst, this just outright uncomfortable situation makes us want to grab the under. It's at 54 at most books. Jared, I don't think you've been listening. I'm just going to watch the cars crash into each other. Again, I'm not that good of a person.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I can't put a side on it either way. And in the under, maybe. But like I said, I think the quarterbacks are probably the best position group in this game. So who knows? Who knows? It's like I said, it's a train wreck, but we're going to watch.
There is one more notable top 25 game tonight. Let's see. It's in my notes. Furman, Mississippi. No. I kid. Notre Dame heads to Texas A&M tonight. +3 for the Irish. Total of 46.
Do you want me to take over for a bit here? Like, do you want to gather your thoughts?
It's either that or I start talking about the Furman Paladins.
So Texas A&M, as you said, a 3-point home favorite. Total of 46. It is year 3. Of the Marcus Freeman era at Notre Dame, but that comes with big expectations. Obviously, they are odds-on favorites to make the college football playoff this year. The schedule sets up pretty well, and a win at Kyle Field would look very good on the resume, I think, to start the season. Meanwhile, it is game one for Mike Elko at College Station. He's hoping that a simplified playbook will help the Aggies' talent shine through here. And if he gets a win against the Irish in his first game at home, he's going to be feeling pretty great to start off his tenure there with the Aggies. So Douglas, Notre Dame, they never go on the road and win as underdogs outright, do they? Do they, Doug?
Like, they were 3-point underdogs at North Carolina in 2022. Marcus Freeman was 1-2 at that point, his first season. Losses to Ohio State and Marshall. Notre Dame won 45-32. It's Andrew, this is one of my pet peeves in our industry. This makes me frustrated in the gambling conversation. It's supposed to be hard to win on the road as an underdog. Notre Dame is one of the five winningest programs in the last seven seasons since its 2016 faceplant. We all remember that 4-8 debacle. In those seven regular seasons since, the Irish have been underdogs 12 total times. They've gone 9-3 against the spread in those moments, including 3-1 on the road with an underdog of at least three. Notre Dame has gone 6-6 outright as an underdog in the last seven regular seasons. 6-6 outright as an underdog, and people are still telling me that Notre Dame never wins those games. This narrative is nothing but lazy. In the last seven seasons, Notre Dame has gone 20-10-1 against the spread on the road. More pertinently, hold on. What do you got there? Okay, if you insist. More pertinently, Marcus Freeman, in his two seasons as Irish head coach, has gone 6-3 against the spread on the road. Now, I'll admit, the Notre Dame conversation aggravates me more than others because I know that program better than any other. It was my day job for seven seasons to cover that team for NBC Sports. So when I hear somebody say Notre Dame never wins these games, I can cite the examples. I can point to 6-3 against the spread on the road. It is a lazy narrative, and basing any bets off Notre Dame never shows up in these games is just missing the point. We're not talking about what is in front of us. And now that I'm warmed up,
you good?
Let's talk about why this line moved.
Okay. It's an interesting move. I actually lined it the other way. I have it lined as closer to a pick'em. Once again, two very good defenses, particularly front sevens. But I've got the edge to Riley Leonard when it comes to quarterback play here. I think his ability to pass and run will be able to give Texas A&M some problems in this matchup. And I think the Aggies are a really talented football team, and they could be one of those surprise teams in the SEC this year. Still a lot of what ifs. Like, we're still waiting for that to happen. We know what we're getting with Notre Dame at this point. So, and now we're getting a field goal with Notre Dame in this spot. Like, I'm leaning towards the Irish here at +3.
Notre Dame expected to start redshirt freshman Charles Jagusa at left tackle. He started the bowl game against a depleted Oregon State, and he played well. But that's all we've seen from him. He tore his pec at the start of August. Once he was ruled out for the year, this line moved from +1.5 to +2.5. And then this week, it reached +3. Now, I've already talked about how I feel about week one line moves. But when you know why they moved, it's a little different. We know this moved because a freshman left tackle injured. A freshman with one career start against a depleted defense moved this a point and a half. How many left tackles should have that kind of impact? I know now Notre Dame is starting a true freshman at left tackle in Anthony Knapp on the road against talented Purdue transfer defensive end Nick Scorton with Mike Elko scheming up a defense. I hear the worries, but would those worries not have existed with Charles Jagusa too? And secondly, Notre Dame had other options. Tosh Baker is a 6'8", fifth-year veteran with starting experience. Yet the Irish are starting a true freshman. That is an endorsement to me. Notre Dame offensive line coach Joe Rudolph has been recruiting Anthony Knapp for almost 3 years. Rudolph was at Virginia Tech before he came to South Bend, and he was chasing Knapp then. He trusts his evaluation of Knapp. He had options like Tosh Baker. He stuck with Knapp. Notre Dame has had nearly a month to figure this out, to scheme up some blocking up, probably turn to massive tight end Mitchell Evans to help with these defensive ends. Moving this line to a key number of +3, because a freshman with no starts is replacing a freshman with one start, is a clear overreaction to me, which is how I have gotten myself to Notre Dame +3, -110, pretty widely available, including at DraftKings. That is where I have landed on this game, because we are overreacting to a left tackle injury from somebody who we've seen only play a depleted Oregon State.
Well, there you have it. So, Douglas, what do we've got next? We've hit most of the big games here. Now what can we do for the folks watching College Football 134 Week 1?
Well, if that covers the major storylines, you and I are here for the betting value across the board. We're called College Football 134 because there are 134 FBS teams. This is what we're about. So let's get into our best bets. Let's remind people to throw some more best bets in there.
Also, like and subscribe.
Maybe we'll actually agree. ask our thoughts on any games you want. We've got a few of those already queued up. I assure you, we have plenty of thoughts. I will start us off today for one moment, and it's going back to the well from Tuesday. I gave out UNLV plus 118 on Tuesday. That went against me, up to plus 140, plus 145. But again, I've mentioned how I feel about line moves in week one. But what is curious is as the money line and spread have moved, the total hasn't. It is still available at 55.5 or 56. And I am taking the under 56 in UNLV at Houston. UNLV runs an up-tempo offense. The key word is that it runs that offense. The go-go offense is ground-based. Houston's defense will be better. There's no choice when you bring in Willie Fritz. But Houston's offense is going to be junk. Willie Fritz runs the ball. When Willie Fritz can't run the ball, he still runs the ball. That's going to doom the Cougars' offense this season. If UNLV can get a small lead, the go-go offense can default into slowing things down pretty easily, given how much it's a running offense. Taking that under 56 is one of my best bets today.
I love it. It's sick. I love it. So I'm going to roll on here. Roll Tide as Alabama plays host to Western Kentucky. And so we talk a lot on this show, Doug, about that we want you to tune in on Tuesdays in order to get the best numbers available, particularly in this week, because you've mentioned it several times. These week one lines are stale. They're old. They've been bet to death. We've lost a lot of value here. So one way to combat that is looking for fresh lines. And I think player props fall into that category. They haven't been up for very long here. So we are getting a much better shot at betting these good numbers. So my second play for today is another player prop, and I'm going with Jalen Milroe to go over 240.5 passing yards. And, well, you might say, hey, he only averaged 230 yards per game last season in the regular season. Maybe this is a too much of a boost, but this is a really simple handicap for me, and it comes down to Kalen DeBoer. Here's what DeBoer's teams have ranked in terms of pass play percentage each of the last four seasons. So last two at Washington and the two at Fresno State before that. 14th, 10th, 6th, and 9th. And we saw the last two seasons what he did with Michael Penix Jr. throwing for nearly 9,500 yards in those games. And I think he can work that same kind of magic this season with Milroe, who began his career looking like he was just going to be a run-first guy, like a power-running quarterback, maybe a little like KJ Jefferson sort of thing, but really turned into an efficient passer last season. And he threw for 230 yards per game, while Bama ranked 120th in pass play percentage. So there's just a little bit of a difference there between a Kalen DeBoer offense and what Alabama was running with Nick Saban there last season. I think any bump for Milroe, and we're going to see it, and these numbers are going to go up. Bama should also overmatch an okay, but definitely less talented Western Kentucky secondary. And if you go back and you look at Washington's games last year, even when they were big favorites, they were throwing the football like 40 times a game. Like, the running game supplements the passing game in Kalen DeBoer's offense. I don't think that's going to change now that he's at Alabama. So I see them throwing the ball enough for him to get this one over. I can see him hitting some big bombs, which will help us get over there quickly. Over 240.5 passing yards for Jalen Milroe. That's minus 115, and that's pretty widely available as well.
I like that. I will also point out you're giving me grief for betting a UNLV Houston under while you're looking at a passing prop in a game with a spread nearing 5 touchdowns. We all have our perversions in life. Some of them are just more palatable than others. I had to look all over the board this week. It's part of the job. And I had better thoughts earlier in the week. Like you said, tune in on Tuesdays. Some of these numbers are much better. On Sunday afternoon, we always get a few picks out onto the Covers free picks page, which, you know what, I'll throw up on the screen here for the crowds. We always get a few picks up there right away to start the week. And I had South Alabama -5. It's now -6 or -6.5. In my Thursday Best Bets column, the piece that causes me the most stress this week, every week, I had Texas at -31.5. I believe that is now approaching -35. But one number that hasn't moved much since it initially moved, is Troy -8 against Nevada. Yes, Nevada almost upset SMU last week. Congratulations, Wolfpack. You still lost. You coughed up an 11-point lead when you had the ball with less than 11 minutes left in the fourth quarter. You gave up 16 unanswered points to lose going away. You got outgained by 1.7 yards per play and 110 total yards. And still, This spread, this week's spread, fell by 5.5 points. It should not have moved at all. Maybe 13.5 could have become 13, but 13.5 becoming 8 is bonkers, idiotic, and it's one of those late line moves that baffles me and is what I'm trying to warn folks against. Troy head coach Jared Parker has Nevada film to study a further week one advantage, and that film is going to show him that the Wolfpack was completely outplayed in his 29-24 loss last week, and therefore -8, I'm thrilled. I was thrilled when this got to -9.5.
It's crazy. I watched a bunch of that Southern Methodist game because I had them. I remember feeling very confident because I had bet the Ponies -21 like weeks ago, and everybody was out there complaining about like, oh, did you get 24 before it hit 27? And which way is the... It didn't matter, obviously. I thought that game told us more about Southern Methodist than it did Nevada. So I really like this play here. And once again, we don't love agreeing with one another. So, Doug, I'm going to get sick on you here, too. The cover's 134. So we're going to cover a team that is playing its very first FBS game. And, of course, talking about Kennesaw State. They are taking on UTSA this week. Now, these FCS to FBS transitions are usually quite difficult for these teams. Like Sam Houston State last season had some difficult games. They turned it on at the end of the season, but they were covering spreads. They were covering spreads for a while. James Madison proved that they were a tough out early on in their FBS tenure as well. Obviously, I think those two teams were a little more more established programs than Kennesaw State is coming into this FBS season. But I'm looking at the Owls here at +13.5 in the first half. Yes. A big reason for that is because I think sportsbooks are undervaluing the loss of Roadrunners quarterback Frank Harris. I think I read somewhere he's got like 5,000 more passing yards than the next closest Roadrunner. I know the program hasn't been around for a long time, but Frank Harris was everything. He is a fantastic player, no longer there. Jeff Traylor is a very good coach, but I'm not even sure he knows who his quarterback is at the moment, and we've got kickoff a few hours away. I know we've got a McNown who is potentially the starting quarterback, but I'm hearing that they could play both in this game. Like I said, Owls not a great FCS team last season, but the defense does return 9 starters, so it's a veteran group. The Roadrunners also have a lot of changes in the trenches this year on the defensive and offensive lines, so lots of new bodies. We just watched a Colorado team, like we can, once again, we'll save that rant for Tuesday, but a Colorado team with a bunch of transfers on the field together, and it wasn't really, same with Florida State, bunch of transfers on that defensive line. Things didn't gel right away for them. I'm hoping the same thing happens here. Kennesaw State is able to keep it close in the first half. I can see the Roadrunners figuring out as the game moves on and they come closer to covering the 24.5, I think the full game spread is. But I like the Owls. Keep this one close in the first half. Kennesaw State +13.5. Let's go. Douglas, I think you're muted. This is a first. We have a first.
I want to give credit to Joe Everett here. That is Dr. Emeritus Frank Harris. He is correct. Ooh. He deserves that respect. He will have a statue outside of the UTSA stadium as soon as possible. He deserves it. And you are right. Sportsbooks may undervalue him. But you opened that bet with, you like it when we disagree more than you like it when we agree. I disagree with you here. It was one of my best bets in my weekly column that I was taking UTSA for a team total over a lofty 37.5.
We can still both win.
We can still both win. For me, it's that UTSA knows they have to lean into the run game. And Kennesaw State's not going to have a defensive line that can hold up to that. We hear UTSA and we're kind of dismissive, but Jeff Traylor has built this program on Texas recruiting. And now on the other side of the ball, the reason I think you really might need to worry, Kennesaw's offense is going to struggle. It's a young offensive line trying to pave the way for an offense that ran the ball on 68.2% of its snaps last season. This offense is trying to transition out of the triple option by relying on zone reads or run pass options. The offensive line needs to be perfectly in sync to make those play calls work. And I don't think it will be in September. I'm going to fade Kennesaw State in various ways in September. Today, I'm going to assume their offense is going to have a bounty of 3 and outs, which will allow UTSA to run up the score even without Dr. Frank Harris. So yes, we both can win. We can have a 13-0 game and a half and have it explode to 41-0 by the end. But I do think it might be that rough.
Yeah, we'll see. Like I said, early on, Kennesaw State, watch out for those Owls. Hootie hoo.
Now I need to get one more play in today. I'm a little in agony over it. I drove my Jeep down to Iowa on Tuesday to make sure I had all my future positions taken care of. Sat in my Jeep, ate a delicious pizza at the side of a lake, and I bet North Dakota State plus 10 at Colorado on Thursday. Cash. I bet South Dakota State to win the FCS championship at plus 125. We'll see. I bet South Dakota State plus 10 at Oklahoma State today. That line's down to 9.5 or 9, and obviously there's a big difference. That line is now correct. So I want to acknowledge I teased that game earlier in the show, and I do personally have a 3-1 money line ticket, but I'm not going to encourage anyone else to go that route. So for my third play, and this is as much about encouraging our continuing education as it is a value play, Boise State named Maddox Mattson its starting quarterback over USC transfer Malachi Nelson. And the general reaction among college football folks was, like, that's a
– oh, damn.
That's a choice. It was most likely an oh, damn choice to lean on star running back Ashton Gentry, and four returning starters along the offensive line. It's what Boise State did last season. It should work against Georgia State. But that's not an aggressive approach to set up a Mountain West title on a playoff bid. So I'm looking at Boise State, and I'm thinking Spencer Danielson is going to remain conservative against a Georgia Southern offense that relays on explosive plays and explosive pass plays, and Boise State generally limits those. So I'm on the under 57, available at neg 115, and I really – part of me making this bet is I want to watch Boise State that closely today to have a strong idea if I need to put more money down on UNLV to win the Mountain West as I did Tuesday, if I need to put more money down on Appalachian State, my beloved Mountaineers, to make the playoff as I did again on Tuesday. Boise State at Georgia Southern under 57 is a number I like, mostly because I think Boise State is about to show us they're going to go conservative this season.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one, unfortunately. I like Gentry a lot in this game. I was looking for player props for him all week, and I haven't found anything posted yet because I feel like books know that they're going to run him into the ground in this matchup.
Which, further reason. Like I like this number. I like this bet. But sometimes I will make a bet partially to make myself watch it that much more closely. And this game could teach us a lot about the playoff chase, which you don't expect me to say for Boise State, Georgia Southern, but it is still a truth. Now, Andrew, we've got some people in the comments. You wanted to touch on Miami of Ohio at Northwestern. Carlos Bilbao brought that to us.
I don't love it, to be honest. Now that that's more than a field goal, I think Miami of Ohio is a really, really good MAC team. They probably have the best quarterback in the MAC Gabbert. I keep forgetting if it's Blake or for the first name, but it's Gabbert's little brother. He's the best quarterback in the MAC these days, but that defense is also maybe the best defense in the MAC as well. Very veteran team here. They're going to be a really tough out in this game, and supposed to be a little windy, I think, at Northwestern today. A lot of running the football I'm expecting in this matchup. So I'm, like I said, on Tuesday, I'm under the 40.5, and that would tend to lead me towards the underdog here. So I don't, if this got back to the 3, it's one of those spots where I don't love the hook here. So in that case, I'd probably stay away from it.
One note I want to make on this one, and we should make it repeatedly with Northwestern. I heard somebody have this misconception yesterday. Yes, Northwestern is playing at a temporary lakeside stadium this season while Ryan Field undergoes massive renovations. That's not really a loss in home field advantage. If you've ever been to Ryan Field, you know there wasn't a whole lot of home field advantage to start with. It was not the most appetizing or enthralling college football environment. So I would not make any bets this season thinking, oh, Northwestern has less of a home field advantage. That just will not be the case. We have Mr. Gerg. I don't know if that's a typo or if the name is Mr. Gerg asking us about Charlotte. He likes Charlotte plus 8. Now, keep in mind, that line was closer to a touchdown, maybe under a touchdown, until Charlotte head coach Biff Pogge, always without sleeves, came out and said, we're down 8 or 9 starters from preseason practices. Mm-hmm. He might be playing the media game. He has to really couch expectations with his program right now, but they're definitely going to be down some players. And that moved this line across the touchdown, across the key number, up to 8.5.
I'm avoiding it now because obviously James Madison is going through a huge transition year. No more Kirk Cignetti. And like basically he took half of his good defenders with him to Indiana. Jordan McLeod's gone to Texas State. Like there's just a lot of new faces for James Madison. And if that quote hadn't come out, then I probably would have been betting this Charlotte line here. But with, like you said, who knows if it's just media speak or whatever it is, but it makes me a little nervous. And obviously James Madison has been the better program in recent years, and maybe they still have enough talent there to kind of grind out that win and cover, particularly against a shorthanded Charlotte team. I just don't know. And I don't follow Charlotte enough to know what is true and what is not. So like I said, if that quote hadn't come out, maybe I would be on the 49ers here, but I'm going to stay away.
I'm going to create a weekly award for our viewers, our commenters, and it is the weekly hot take. We have Jay Seaton seeing a car crash coming and not just taking a sip out of his beer. He is throwing himself down into traffic to be a piece of the car crash, suggesting a Florida alt line of 5.5, paying plus 180 for a game that all I want to do is spectate and enjoy the entire state of Florida cringing. Jay Seaton is just jumping into the mix, and that is – again, that's a choice.
It's a choice. But, like, in a game where you're uncomfortable and you think Florida is going to win, like, I don't hate it. I think there's some value at the plus money there. So there's worse bets you can make today.
And we do have Todd Clinton giving you a little bit of faith, a little bit of hope.
I don't need any of that.
West Virginia should play Penn State close, liking the 8 points with the Mountaineers. You and Garrett Green are going to have some people's intrigue.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching that one pretty closely today, so it'll be stressful, but fun.
I think that about does it for us. Before we get out, let's do podcast 101, give the recap, and as we give the recap, we should make sure folks know, like, review, star, subscribe, help us convince the corporate overlords to keep setting my Saturday morning this early. All of the verbs, all of them, please do. It helps us immensely, more than you realize. Taco, why don't you recap your week?
I have to pause you for 1 second, though, because Jared here chimed in.
I'm going to get to it. I'm gonna get to Jared. Don't you worry about Jared.
Okay, we'll get to Jared in a second. Okay, so I started the week, Clemson, Georgia, first half under 24.5. Like we said, that's going to be a rock fight. Miami of Ohio and at Northwestern under the total of 40. And Indiana team total over 37.5, just really quickly. That's where Kirk Cignetti is. I really like Curtis Rourke there. I think they're going to take advantage of this FIU team. I also did mention, we don't have this down, I am on LSU -4 on Sunday night as well. I really like that play. So from today, Garrett Green over 43.5 rushing yards. Jalen Milroe over 240.5 passing yards. And Kennesaw State plus 13.5. in the first half at UTSA. Let's go.
First of all, yes, Jared is asking me to follow through on my Furman Paladins threat. I'm going to go solo layout just to better the chances of getting this into the shop. This is my childhood dog, Paladin, the world's largest Boston Terrier. Yes, he weighed 50 pounds. And that is why I will always have a soft spot for the Furman Paladins. They are 42.5 point underdogs at Mississippi today. And Jared, it's not just that I bet the 42.5. I bet Furman to win.
Woo!
Sometimes you got to live dangerously. Now, my actual bets this week, the things that I am entirely invested in, we are on Tuesday, remaining from Tuesday, I need to fix this screen one moment, please. Why do you keep showing up instead of me? Remove Andrew from the screen. There we go. From Tuesday remaining, I have Eastern Michigan. Chris Creighton as an underdog, plus 122 at UMass. I will always take Chris Creighton as an underdog. UNLV, plus 118 at Houston. I touched on that earlier with the under. Under 56 is one of my best bets from today. Also, Notre Dame, plus 3 at Texas A&M. Troy, -8 at Nevada. And Boise State at Georgia Southern, under 57.5. To end my Saturday slate. Enjoy this Saturday, folks.
I have to fire producer Mario for that one. That was tough.
We'll do
Come
our
on.
Best.
Pick up your game, Mario. Come on, we know.
He got up early with us, okay?
He did. Don't give him a shout out. Thank you very much, Mario. Thank you.
And maybe Mario Cristobal has a good day. Maybe producer Mario can learn from those lessons. Or maybe producer Mario learns that Mario Cristobal is packing his boxes. Enjoy this Saturday, folks. We get only 14 like this, and that's with an extra one this year. Remember, this is supposed to be fun. Nobody's going to have more fun today than Ball State, the only FBS program not playing in week one. So enjoy your week off, Cardinals. We will be back in your podcast feeds late on Tuesday. Back live again next Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern here on the Covers YouTube, Covers Twitter, Andrew's Twitter, my Twitter. Don't forget those subscribes, likes. Andrew, have fun today.
You too, buddy.